What's that sound, boys and girls? That's the sound of Jopie opening a fresh can of JopieCast. Howdy, folks, and welcome. This is episode 12 of the JopieCast for the week of March 20th, 2006. I'm your host, Joe, Mr. Positive, Jopie Fitzpatrick. The JopieCast is a weekly podcast that looks at the local music scene of Western Massachusetts. In the background, you're listening to the sounds of the band Umphrey's McGee. I discovered Umphrey's McGee on the Pandora.com website. We'll be checking out this band a little bit more in a future episode. Our guest this week is one of those guys, you either love him or you hate him. He's got a heart as big as his laugh and his tummy. Ed Battis plays the blues like he really means it. He's taught me a thing or two just after a few gigs. Love him or hate him, you can't ignore him. He's got something to say both on stage and off. I got a cool internet site for you all, some gig reviews and such in the news, and I'll rant about my computer buying experience. Ay, ay, ay. But first, let's get right into some news. New releases this week. Prince with 3121. Kevin O'Hare from The Republican likes it, and I usually somewhat agree with his reviews. Although I have to say, I'm not super impressed with Donald Fagen's new one that Kevin likes so much. I mean, it's as good as anything else he's done, I guess. It's just more of the same. Too many mid-tempo bluesy numbers. I don't know. I need a surprise or two. And there were just none for me. Ooh, Gary Numan has a new one out this week, Jagged. Amazon.com calls it an aggressive, forward-looking release, which takes the best elements of Newman's previous work and gives them an anthemic contemporary twist. There's also one from Ben Harper, live, and a live Otis Rush release as well. Good records coming out this week. I did get out and hear some music this weekend, and it's kind of funny because this whole topic came up on the soundboard message board just this past weekend. The fact that most of my reviews are generally positive, not so controversial. Yeah, that might be the case. I tend to look for more positive things when I'm listening to music. I want to take something away that's good. And I'm just not really someone that really criticizes things a whole lot. But I gotta say something about a show I saw on Friday night. Up at Bishop's, Akashic Record. I love the band. It was just too loud. Am I getting old? And I like loud music. I like to feel the bass in my chest. But when he would grab the mic and do some shouting, it just totally blew out the PA speakers. They were just really distorting really, really badly. I don't know how he wasn't hearing it. I had earplugs in and I could still hear that it was really distorted. I hate when people overlook the way that things are sounding. Bring a friend who's a sound person. Have them listen. Give them some signals. Turn that mic down when you talk. Maybe get a second mic. And then Saturday, I was so excited. I even brought Sandy out to Bishop's to see the Sam Kinniger Band, and I hope I've been saying that incorrectly all this time. Great! Sam Kinniger Band, and I was really hoping to see Nikki Glaspie, and it wasn't her. And I don't want to talk about what drummer is better than this drummer or that drummer, but this fella that was playing just didn't have the deep pockets that Nikki does when she plays. So Nikki, you were missed. The gentleman playing was very, very talented. He had this style that was really interesting. I couldn't tell if it was bugging the heck out of me or if it was just really cool. When he would play his fills, and he was playing some pretty intricate fills, he was almost rushing them. And I mean, that's a pretty typical thing that we see beginners do all the time. And even experienced people, for that matter. But it almost seemed like he was doing it purposely, just to add some style. but it was on every single song. So after a while, I was starting to think, well, maybe that's just his thing. But he was a great drummer. Just, I miss Nicky. Please come back. All right, I have to rant this week. Sorry, folks. I know I'm usually Mr. Positive. I went through consumer hell this past weekend, and really it all started about 4 years ago when the Mrs., I'll call her Sandy from now on, Sandy and I purchased an iBook from Apple. Well, we got stuck with one of those iBooks that had a major logic board problem. Over the next 3 years, the iBook screen went dark 3 times. Each time Apple paid for all the repairs and shipping costs, and it was always fixed in a timely manner. I can't complain about that. But when it happens this past month, my Apple Care warranty and the repair program set up by Apple for this particular model had both expired. It was going to cost $350 to repair something that would just happen again. I had it with that machine, and luckily it was still functioning. Just the screen wasn't working. I was able to connect to it via my home network and get the important documents off. Days later, I'm cleaning up my other computer's hard drives, the G4 desktop, making backups of all my podcasts, throwing out stuff I don't need, then defragmenting my hard drives. Defragmenting is a process that keeps your hard drives running smoothly. Recording audio is demanding on the drives, so it's best to keep them optimized. Well, I used an outdated version of a program called Tech Tool Pro. People, do not do this. I had 2 internal drives that were partitioned into 6 separate drives. 3 of them would not mount, meaning I couldn't access the data on them. Arrgh! That's okay. I've been backing up all week. But of course, not the stuff from those drives. So I have to do all this reinitializing of drives, copy, backup, yada yada. Like, I have the time for this. I go ahead and order a new iBook G4 laptop on the Apple Store. Ordered on the 15th, scheduled to ship on the 20th, should be here the 27th. Yuck, that's a long freaking time. 4 days after I order, I get an email. Your purchase was not able to be completed, yada yada yada, card denied. What the freak's going on? I figure it's an outdated card on file or a mistyped expiration date. I didn't want to wait until the 17th anyway, so I get on the phone and I cancel with Apple. So I finally convinced Sandy, that it's time to do this. We decided to take a drive down to Connecticut, to the Apple Store in the West Farms Mall, probably an hour and a half drive from here. We finally get to the register, busy day at the Apple Store. Card freaking denied. Now I'm getting pissed. We walk around a bit and decide we need to figure out what's going on before we make a move. Back home we go empty-handed. Now it's Sunday. There is 1 branch of our bank open over in the Walmart in Ware. I'm up at the crack of... Well, it's a little later than the crack of dawn, but I found out that morning there was a $1,000 limit on my debit card and that I could increase it, but only Monday through Friday. Okay then, can I get a bank check? Sure, I get a $1,500 bank check to cover the laptop, and back to Connecticut I go. Get in line, yada yada yada, explain I was there the day before. I even find the girl that looked like Winona Judd that had helped us out the day before. And she's like, oh, we don't accept the bank checks. I'm like, what? She gets the manager and he's like, sorry sir, we need you to actually make the check out here in front of us, as in a personal check. But do I have a personal check on me? And would I even have enough in that account at this point? Now I'm boiling mad and trying to be a good sport. I get on the phone with Sandy and we finally decide to just freaking put it on a credit card until I can get the bank check back in the bank and then pay off the credit card. I finally get the computer, walking back to the car. I can't find the freaking car. No, this isn't happening to me. And yes, I do finally find the car. I get the bank check back in the bank. The new laptop and free printer rocks, let me tell you. But gosh darn it all, I think I aged a week in just that weekend. And it's hard for me to point fingers. Should I be mad at the bank that I didn't know of the $1,000 limit? I'm sure it was in the fine print somewhere. And should I be ticked at Apple for snubbing my bank check? Well, I guess I should have called and asked first. It was all just one of those things where nothing lined up the way it should have. Or maybe it did. Perhaps the iBook I would have taken home on Saturday was a lemon. Yeah, that's what I'll be thinking. Sorry, sucker. Nothing like throwing your anger around onto some unsuspecting, undeserving Mac user. Okay, I'm sorry. And okay, rant done. Ladies and germs, I'd like you to meet Ed Vadas. Holy freaking cow, ladies and germs, that is Ed Vadas and the Fabulous Hyperweights,
right,
I believe.
Right.
Well, before I forget, can you tell us who exactly is on that recording?
Well, they've babyface Nelson and Steve Toutant, we call AKA Junior, and myself.
Boy, that really, really rocks.
It, you know, here's the funny thing is, I have a thing, when I, no matter what festival I play or what concert I play, I never play anything I know. So we made that up right on the spot. That was just like, I went out, I had no idea what I was going to play. I picked up the guitar and went like that. And then I just started playing and the band climbed in and all those dynamics and all those things dropping out are just the way we play, you know. Man. I don't teach a band as a band leader to play songs, but I have them play a system so that they're free to play with all the, I give them like 15 or 20 toys and say,
right
here, play with these toys. And I don't care when you do with them or what, but don't play no other toys. The toys stay in the blues box.
Right.
And so I'm as thrilled as they are when it goes up and goes down. A lot of players say, you got to play straight here. You got to do this there, you know, so they can play the little touchy little solos. And I say, you know, play, guys. I tell my bands, look, do anything you can to screw me up. Just do it well. Yeah. And if they want to, I said, if you guys want to stop playing and go out and get a drink at the bar, that's perfectly fine. But when you come back in, you better come in. That's all. I don't care. You know, you can do cuts. You can switch it to a samba. You can play a rumba. You can do anything, especially during the solo. They shove it right up me, you know? Mm-hmm. So I like that. And then on this particular live album, it's real rough. I decided in late life that I made a lot of good records. I saw the records as oil paintings, something that has to be listened to over and over, and it's got different layers, but it doesn't really catch what I am, which is spontaneous and rough.
Right.
So
yeah, that's just an intense energy.
Yeah. So this whole album is like rough, and so it's an experiment. I'm going to experiment. A lot of these people in the blues community hate what I do. They he's not a blues guy, you know. And so I want to say, well, maybe I'll throw out this rough thing and see if they say, oh, man, this is more like it, you know. Or if they, you know, say, oh, boy, this is even worse than the other stuff. So anyway, it's a little experiment in my late life.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Hey, let's step back just a little bit. I want to talk about your early influences.
My mother was a very, as a young child, she was very...
Yeah. I was going to ask about some personal influences as well.
It's a funny thing. I say that as a joke, but my mother used to always say, when I was interested in music and stuff when I was a kid, you know, I was always... She said, well, Eddie, you know, nowadays the kids have so many chances to go out there and do that. When I was young, I loved Fanny Bryce. When she was, you know, my mother was pretty old when I was born. And I, Fanny Bryce, and I always wanted to be a comedian.
Aww.
So she says, so, you know, if you want to do something like that, you take the chance and go ahead. You know, so it was pretty cool.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then musical influences.
Musical influences. It's hard to say it's not hard to say. When I was 2 years old, it was 1946. My brother had gone away in the army for World War II, left behind his record collection of 78. So my mother and my sisters, in order to shut me up, used to put the little record player down on the floor, little 78 thing that it had a wire that attached to the radio. So we had this, but the player was down there, you know.
Yeah.
And I would be there with a pile of records, and I would play them. I can remember some of the songs. We had that song. There was an old country song, Detour, there's a muddy road ahead, Detour. And there was all kinds of big band stuff, and Frankie Kyle Boogie and Boogie Woogie. And I found out later there was also Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee I was listening to, because later on, like 20 years later, I went to see my brother, and he was down in Texas. I never saw him really much as I grew up. And I discovered the records that I had played when I was a kid. And they were all stuff that I had gone out and bought when I was 18, but didn't know. Because from 2 to 5, that's when I was listening to this stuff. And that's where I got that groove, I think, put in me. Yeah. And then later on, the first record I bought, I mean, I bought things like I had Roy Orbison, Hey, Baby, Rock Over Here, you do the something. I know the flip side was Go, Go, Go. It was his only rock song before he started singing that, Go, 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 and I do, you know, my Tutti Frutti. Oh, was it Tutti Frutti? No. But anyway, Elvis Presley. I loved Elvis Presley. When I got older, there was the folk song revival, and I started playing. I wanted to play guitar, but I couldn't, so I played a little banjo. I played washed up bass first because I didn't think I could ever be able to play an instrument. And during the folk song revival, everybody was really trying to find songs. So after high school, I would walk down to Worcester and go and listen to the Library of Congress folk song collections, the Lomax stuff, and there were some other things. And I'd listen to Chain Gangs and people beating flax wheat on the table and linen and all these different Chain Gang songs. And I would love them, but I didn't play an instrument. And I had a friend who played banjo, and I'd hang out, and I'd kind of sing him, and he'd kind of try to play along, and we didn't know what the hell we were doing. I played the washed-up bass. And then I got to a girlfriend of mine had a banjo, so I sat down one day, and I could make a chord. I said, I can make a chord. So I went out, and I bought a banjo, and I played that for 6 months. And then I was at my friend's house. He had his guitar. I picked it up. I said, wow. After 6 months of playing the banjo, I could play a guitar chord. So I put the banjo down, bought a guitar.
And how old were you when this happened?
I was 22. Oh. I was late. I never touched a guitar until I was 22.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
It is wild. If you think about back to all the gigs that you've done over the years, can you think of your most embarrassing gig moment?
Is this a question you ask everyone?
Yeah.
I can very definitely, I don't think there's one better than this. I was playing Greenfield Community College. And it has to be at least 20 years ago, at least 20, maybe longer. Sometime in the early 70s, I think. And I used to do a harmonica solo where I would just go to the edge of the stage and I'd be doing gyrations and a train thing and all this stuff. And I remember it was really, really hot and muggy. We were inside the building. It was at night when they used to have the concerts at night. That's how long it was. Now they have them at daytime. I'm in there, and I said, wow, and I'm playing. And I commented to myself, I said, it is so hot in here that I can actually feel the air going up my pants and cooling my testicles. And then I'm playing, and I'm playing, and I'm looking down, and there's a woman at the front table, and I'm on a stage about two feet up, and she's looking at me, and her mouth is open and her eyes are like, oh my God. I finished the song and I looked down and my pants were ripped open.
Oh no.
From the zipper right down to the almost to the knee. And back in the hippie days, who wore underwear?
Who does nowadays?
Yeah. It was like the whole fruit salad was.
Oh,
that's
man.
What I heard. So I can't believe I can feel the cold breeze on my testicles.
Oh, that has to be the best story I've heard so far.
Oh, yep. Unbelievable.
By far.
And that girl was gone. I mean, I felt like, I had to come out and tie a sweatshirt around me like a dress for the next set, you know?
I noticed I was doing some reading on your website. You have great stuff on your website, by the way. I encourage people to go there and check it out. But I mentioned that you do some teaching, and I'm curious how long you've been doing that.
Well, I'm an opinionated son of a gun, and people do teaching, like you teach drums.
I teach drums, Jim?
Yeah, I teach drums, but I don't play drums. And what I teach drums is I teach them things that drummers don't teach them. First of all, I teach philosophically and logic. Philosophically and logic, I would say, like, you know, if you can do this, then you can do that. And why can't you do this here? And why can't you do that there? But it's like, I mostly try to work on people's philosophy, for instance. And everybody has one. So I don't have a philosophy. Well, for instance, when some jerk sits in, his philosophy is to go up there and wank and try to prove to the audience that he's wonderful.
Right.
And sometimes those people get in bands and they do the same thing. And you get the end result is catastrophic. But, you know, I have a lot of things that I believe. I believe, for instance, that it's a given if you're in a band that you should be able to play your instrument to a certain extent, at least well enough to play songs. So then we don't judge band on how good, you know, are you the best drummer or are you the second best drummer in the world? It doesn't matter. Right. You're the drummer that's there, and you should be able to play your instrument well enough to carry over the repertoire of the band.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's all true, then where does the philosophy come in? Well, it comes into this. The band, if you can hear people thinking on stage, the band is terrible. If you can hear, because it's unnatural. It's unnatural. It's not organic. The arrangements might be zip, doop, bop, beep, bleep, 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 bong, bleep, 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 bleep. And wow, how the, yeah, but everybody had to remember. And oh, and everybody's tenuously walking this thing. So the feel of the instruments and everything is gone for the brain thinking of what's going on. Mm. So all arrangements, therefore, should be something that could happen naturally. All arrangements. That's one of my philosophy. We're going to do something that, theoretically, this could happen by accident and be cool. But we say, let's make this. It'll be cool, and it'll appear that to some that it's an accident.
Mm.
That kind of philosophy. Yep. And the risk. Most players, if you hear a player who plays all night and doesn't make a mistake, get him out of the band. Fire him.
Yeah.
Because a true band should be going for it.
Yeah.
And if you're going for it, you're going to overshoot your mark sometime. You're going to undershoot it, or you're going to be on a different page. But
you went for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so to me, no mistakes is craft. Mistakes is art. It takes it the risk factor. Without risk, art becomes craft. So that's a philosophical approach.
Cool.
Singers come to me. They say, I teach singing, but I don't teach them how to. I can. Sometimes I do, but I don't like that. I'd say, okay, you can sing that song. You sang it in perfect melody. So what? So what? So what? It means nothing. What means something is you've got to make a joyful noise. You've got to do that something like just one song. This girl was singing Stormy Monday. It's Stormy Weather. She goes, don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather. And I said, no, how about don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather. I can't even do it in my own voice, but to get it to hit her absolute low, maybe instead of going an octave below where that note was, or try for it, and breathalyze it.
Right.
So this becomes stylistic. I teach her to do that, hoping that she will take that effect and apply it. But, you know, there's things you can do that are risky, but you want to make a joyful noise. It's like you playing the drum. You play the drums, and all of a sudden, you grab the cymbal and you bang on the side, the rack, right there, the stand actually fits because everybody's bringing it down and somebody's doing something else. You ding, 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 ding. That's the joyful noise.
Yeah.
When a bass player goes, vroom, that's a joyful noise. When a singer squeezes something, goes, oh, mm, joyful noise, you know. And it's not hinged on the melody. The melody is the safe thing. The melody is the craft. You know,
mm-hmm.
The art is how do you take that is craft. Oh, I'm going to take a risk. I'm going to sing a little different bridge than the real bridge. I'm going to phrase it different. I'm going to take it fast. Or something that makes it so. Those are little things. Is that enough?
Well, that's perfect. And I have to say, I saw Hal Benoit play with you a couple times, who I've only known as a guitar player, singer. Yeah. And I really love the way he plays drums. And when I first saw him play drums, he's got a interesting technique, you know.
Well, he has no technique is what he has. Let's call a spade a spade.
Right.
He has no technique.
But it works.
Yeah, and the reason I love playing with him is it comes down to philosophy.
Yeah.
He's a musician. He's a band leader. He's a songwriter.
Yeah.
He's musical. He may not know this paradiddle or that paradiddle. But he has a sense musically of how to make it happen.
Yeah, a great feel.
Yeah, he's seen me a million times, and he knows that he has free license to do anything he wants.
Right.
See, it's not like he's being careful. I said, he knows that I like, do what you can to screw me up. Play from your heart and play the music, you know.
And is he there most Mondays with you?
No.
Okay.
No, he is... I have a six pack of drummers.
Yeah.
As I got older, I said, well, I want to play with some of the guys I played with all my life at different times. Chet Pasak plays one week, mm-hmm. And me and Chet go way back. Rick Marshall plays another week.
Yeah.
My favorite drummer of all times that I've played with, as far as just being a creative in a weird way. Rick is really creative in a kind of funky lift thing. They all bring a different dish to the barbecue, you know.
Yeah.
And Jeff Thompson, chicken.
Yeah.
And he's played with me a lot. And he just, I saw him once. We were in a club. There's like 15 people there. And he used to do a little solo in the middle of one of these songs. And he would say things like, guess what emotion I'm playing in my solo tonight? Or something like that. Well, guess what color I'm playing?
Yeah, nice.
But he hit the ride cymbal, banged it off the drums, hit the floor, jumped off the seat and played the sticks on the thing, keeping it rolling to the center of the floor. Then when it went down, on the side, he kept working the sticks real hard and made it rise up off the floor, down off the floor. And then he did break dancing around it while he was doing it, got it up on the stick and went back to rolled it back towards the drums and then just sat down and continued to play.
Wow.
So I say, you never know what's going to happen with this guy. And it's great. And I was like, whoa. You know? And there's like 8 people in the room or 10 people in the room going, golly, you know.
Hey, we should let people know about that Monday gig.
All right. It's every Monday. We call it Blues Cool Mondays. And we invite anybody that's interested in singing or playing the blues to come down and play. They come in for a couple of songs. And mostly in the first 2 sets. And then sometimes it stretches out into the 3rd set. But we usually finish the night as a band. And it's been going fairly good. But there's not a lot of guys. I think I scared away a lot of people. Because I have these rules. I say, you know, forget Eric Clapton. Forget Stevie Ray. Forget all these things. We want people to play. Go peel the onion back another couple of skins. And bring those kind of songs to them. But those that do come, I think, enjoy it, and we're having fun.
And what time does that usually start?
We think of it as 8:30.
8:30, okay.
Sometimes it doesn't get down to the quarter or 9.
Very good.
8:30.
Cool. You have this new live recording that you're just getting together, but I understand you have an acoustic record as well.
This acoustic album means a lot to me. And it means a lot because it's me. It's like, I'm 61, I'll be 62. I play blues, but I don't play the popular blues. I end up playing something that usually people don't hear too much. And what is this? You know, I thought about it. I says, why am I not doing well? And the reason is I have really got that roadhouse, Mississippi Roadhouse style down. You know, I mean, I can juke joint it out crazy. But those guys may be playing really great blues, but nobody likes that shit. They make $50 a night if they're lucky playing in a juke joint. It's not like somebody comes and takes them someplace else. So I said, I'm going to make a record of just me doing what I do, and it's going to be organic. There'll be some mistakes. There might be some time changes and little things like that, and try to make it sound good. And I went in, and I had an hour in the studio. So I played for 40 minutes, and then I had 2 songs that I did a couple of years earlier at Tommy Filio's little basement studio. Not, it wasn't even a studio. He was just, hey, I'll record you. And I liked those songs. So I put them on there, and I said, made up four or five of the songs on the spot. There's 9 songs. I do that a lot. I make up a lot of songs right on the spot.
Yeah.
And so they're to varying degrees of, oh, how good they are. But they sound all right. They sound legit. They sound all right. They sound like me. This CD sounds like me. And it's kind of like, if you don't like this, you don't like me. And therefore, if not enough people like me, then I'm not going to beat my head against the wall trying to make the blues community take me to some kind of festival and feature me because they hate it, you know?
Right.
But I like this. I say, it's a slice of life. It's a piece of me, and it stands for me. And so if people don't like it, pookie pookie on that.
Well, hey, let's let them decide. Let's take a moment. Let's listen to one of those tracks.
Yeah, this is a Mississippi John Hurt song that I liked, and I've been playing it since I was in Vietnam, but in later years, the last 5 or 6 years, I've really got a sense of making it my own, even though it's his song.
Put it down in old Colorado. Baby, that's my home. Ooh, that's my home. Oh, that's my home. I'm going back, oh, just a roll a little cold. Ooh, roll a little cold. Just roll a little cold. Mm-hmm. Oh, that hammer. Oh, it's so heavy. Get a little my side. Ooh, little my side.
I love this thing. This thing, when you get it going, sometimes. it doesn't sound so good, but it feels great to play. It's like... good sound, and then as far as that, just the guitar and me, I thought he just they made that guitar, made it big. It's an immense guitar.
Ed Vadas from his new upcoming acoustic record, and I gotta tell you, I like it.
Well, you can dance to it.
It's got a nice beat. Well, you've been making music here in the Valley for quite some time, and I gotta ask you, what keeps you going?
You know, people say, well, Ed, you know, why don't you learn some of these guys and those guys' songs and the popular stuff and do this and do that, and then you can make a lot of money and blah, 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 blah. Like, money? Money was never in it. It was, and people said, I don't have a choice. I have to. I'm compelled to play music. Money, I need enough money to put a sandwich in me and a tank full of gas, and that was... Now I'm, you know, settled down. I've got a day job in places. And I'm had some medical problems and stuff, so I don't travel like I used to. But before it was a tank of gas. I used to say $50 a sandwich and a tank of gas, and we're off. You know, we put our 40,000 miles. And people, why don't you try to do this and do that? Why don't you quit and do that? I can't do it. Can't do it. Why don't you play something more popular? Can't do it. Don't want to do it. This is me. This is what it is. And so I always think that part of the philosophy is as a person playing, no matter what your instrument is, you've got to take the sum total of who you are and project it through the instrument in a way that's to be receptive to an audience can receive it, you know?
Yeah.
Some people don't. They might project themselves through it, but the audience goes, eh. You know? So you got to find a way of... People say, well, you got to do more commercial things. You got to make people dance. I says, you don't have to do anything. You have to present something that people are entertained by. Even if they never heard it and you play it good enough, they're going to say, wow, I don't know what it is, but I like it. You know, it's a misnomer to think if you play 30 songs that people know and like that they're going to like you.
Mm.
Right?
Right.
I mean, if you Trailer Park does a lot of their own stuff, don't they?
Yeah.
And they play their ass off. Boom, people like this. What is this?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
They'll dance or they won't dance or they'll sit there and say, I love the words. The third chorus of that one is this or whatever. So this morning, one way to skin a sheep, as they say.
We'll take a couple minutes and we'll just do some listening together.
Yeah,
I'm going to put a little something on here for you to listen to and just to get some general comments from you. I started to go through my iPod looking for bluesy things, and I'm just like, you know, I'm not going to even do that.
I like all kinds of things.
I know you do. So let me fire something up here.
Who is that?
It's a band called King's X.
I don't know, but you know what they remind me of? Many years ago, I was in Denmark, and there was a band called Lonely Killerman and the Rock Band. And that whole feel of this, it's the same. It's like if I played it for you, except there's a little cleaner, mm-hmm. but the drum sound, and I know that's why you like this.
Yeah.
That snare is a killer.
Yeah.
Love that. It's like... the snare is the tree, and everything else is decorations on the tree.
Yes.
You know, it's that this song lives and dies. It's got a backwash of music swirling around, and a killer snare. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
It's a cool. They're just a trio from. I think they're from Canada, and their stuff generally is a little more heavy metal kind of, but interesting arrangements and cool.
You know, some heavy metal drummers, I can't think of the name, the kids in my school bus, they play some stuff for me once in a while. And boy, oh boy, it's just, the drummers are great on some of them.
Oh, really?
Heavy metal drummers, some of them, they whack it nice, they got great tones.
Yeah.
And it's garbage, but I'm convinced this, every genre of music has some people that know what they're doing. They fall in. I don't know why they're in there. I'd rather have them over in my band, but they're playing over there, and they're doing a great job. I mean, I'm one of these guys that when the British invasion came to town back in the 60s, I was at Cape Cod with a pitchfork and a shovel trying to beat them back into the ocean. It didn't work. It didn't work, and they overwhelmed me. And over the next 35 or 40 years, I kept a stout heart, but eventually gave in that some of this British stuff was all right, you know. And one band that I ended up liking, not because of the way they played blues, though they did have a period when they played blues, was Fleetwood Mac. And I saw them on television, and I went crazy over Fleetwood Mac. I said, wow. To me, I hear the blues in it. See, people don't, I hear the finger picking.
Mm, yep.
Just like I'm finger picking on my arm. I hear the drum. The drummer is like, got that blues feel. And some of the way they arrange things. Not the progressions of blues, but a lot of the dynamics. They use a lot of things that I think came out of blues music and probably came out of their study of blues music applied now to their own song. So I like that. And while I might say, I like that. I also saw the Rolling Stones live show at New York on TV, on HBO, and I said, I'm going to watch the Rolling Stones. And I got to tell you, I was taken by how well they did it, live broadcast, 2 hours and 20 minutes. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So then, 3 years later, my friend gets $400 tickets, and we see him last summer down in Hartford.
Oh, nice.
And I am now a Rolling Stones fan. I mean, I just think that they've got to be the best rock and roll band there ever was. They still play. They play better now than they did ever. They got great sound system. They put on a show that is really a great show for a stadium show.
Right.
It's musical. It's not a bunch. They got some little pyrotechnics here and there, but it's a musical show. They played Ruby Tuesday, and it sounded unbelievable. It was so beautiful. I was like, I'm in a stadium with 100,000 people. And you heard this crystal clear thing that just, it's amazing.
Oh, it's nice to hear, actually. You know,
God.
You want them to do well.
The sound is unbelievable. Then people go, oh, they're amazing. Yeah? Anybody can you the Rolling Stones and say, I saw them in 1970. You go see them now. You listen to that sound, you're going to say, if you don't come out with respect for the Rolling Stones, you don't have to love them, but if you don't respect the heck out of them, they're not just greasing along. They learned 138 songs of theirs for those tours, and every night the shows would be different. They played small venues and large venues, and they just... Yeah. So anyway, back to this song. This song is by Fleetwood Mac. And I heard this song, and like I said, I'm getting jaded and old. So at 61 and having at least, I don't know, over 7,000 gigs over a 30 or 40-year period, I said, some of the people I see out there are the same people. I see people in my audience that I know have seen me 400 or 500 times. And a bunch of them. I could probably rattle off 10 names if I had to. And... So I heard this song by them, and it may not be a perfect metaphor, but to me, I would like to learn this song and sing it to my audience, because it's like it speaks to the relationship over the years that a performer like myself has had with audiences, and they change and I change. And the love, you know, when you play for an audience, you're essentially making love to that audience. You are trying to take them to different places and different emotions. And so this is a song. Don't be surprised if I can find a place where this song speaks, where I can speak this song. I would love to be able to do that.
Turn around if you see my reflection. Snow-covered hills where the landslide will bring you down, down. And if you see my reflection in the snow-covered hills, well, maybe the landslide will bring you down. Well, the landslide will bring you down.
Right, my mind gets moist up when I hear that. You know, it's like really speaks that, you know? You know, I just feel like something there it speaks to me. Not the whole song, but parts of it. There's enough. Not a word of this to anyone.
That's a beautiful tune.
I think it's a great song.
Yeah.
And if you use it, you know, the audience, you know, and the changes, and they're getting older, you're getting older, all that stuff.
Yeah.
If we, you know, as we get older as performers, we still have young people. But they get older, and they keep moving. It's like watching a family. I mean, I remember when I would date the girls that were in the audience, and now I would date their grandmothers.
Ouch. So, all right, let me play you one more here. Check this out.
Okay. That's not like Joe Fitzpatrick.
Wait.
It's a New Orleans-y thing, huh?
Yeah, but then listen to that. Put that little drum machine they put on it.
The second line.
Song. It's one of my favorite drummers. It's Jack DeJohnette playing drums.
What's the name of the band? I think
it's Jack DeJohnette's Special Edition.
Is he from New Orleans? Is he a New Orleans cat?
You know, I don't know that.
That very second line.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the title of the song is New Orleans Strut.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure on this record he plays a lot of the keyboard parts, a lot of the piano parts, as well as the drum set. So,
that's
talented
cool.
guy. Yeah.
That second line, kind of, you know what a second line is? Most people don't know what a second line is.
I have no idea.
In a New Orleans funeral, the first line would be the mourners. The second line is the band. And they would play a dirge, like just a closer walk with thee or something, going to the thing. And on the way back, they would play a march, like the saints go marching in, or a second line like this. The joy, the body's gone, now we celebrate that person's life and the kicks of the
cool.
second line.
Thanks for that information.
I'm a master of trivia.
Hey, we're going to wrap this up with something I call the lightning round. In the lightning round, I'm just going to give you an either-or question of, you know, things you might like or things that kind of speak to you. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Drive-in or movie rental?
Drive-in or movie rental? In my old age, movie rental.
All right. McDonald's or Wendy's?
Wendy's.
Yeah. Disco or roller skating?
I'd rather roller skate. And I don't know how.
That's funny. Vanilla or chocolate?
Chocolate.
Hot and humid or cold and windy?
Hot and humid.
Dollar store or IKEA?
IKEA?
No, that's a fancy store.
That's a fancy store? I don't like either one of them, but a dollar store for glasses.
Fancy champagne or Schlitz beer?
Fancy champagne.
All right. Ed, what are we going to listen to on the way out?
Well, this is my old friend, Jimmy O'Connor and his band. They got a new album out, and this is a song Jimmy wrote. And it's Irish, it's St. Patrick's, the end of St. Patrick's Day. Sorry, I figured, let's play Jesus. We might as well play as an Irish song. Don't have young Jimmy O'Connor from Holyoke, and it's John Lees from Northampton, and a bunch of other fellas that's too numerous to mention. They'll be playing an Irish song of Jimmy's own penning.
Great. Ed, thanks so much for coming.
It was a ball. I'll do it again anytime you want.
Thank you, sir.
I walk down the street and there all the people I meet smile and greet me as though they had always been waiting for me to stand on my grandfather's land. And call it home. Come back with me, darling, and I'll wear your ring. The loss of this love would be such a terrible thing. But I would never stray very far away from America. So I do sing, come back with me, darling, and I'll wear your ring. And I'll wear your ring. At a Saturday dance, it was there I had my chance to find
Welcome to Charter Communications. For quality assurance purposes, your call may be monitored.
Para continuar en español, oprima el número 2.
Please enter your 10-digit home phone number, beginning with the area code now.
Ay, ay, ay.
To make a payment by credit card, for account balance information, or other self-help options, press 1. To order new service, to add additional services, or to transfer your service, press 2. If you are experiencing technical difficulties with any Charter product or service, press 3.
Why do you think
I called? For billing questions, press 4. To disconnect or remove services, press 5.
To talk to a person, press what?
To confirm a previously scheduled appointment, press 1. To reset your cable TV converter box, press 2. For cable TV service support, press 3. For high-speed internet service support, press 4.
I don't have time for this. Please.
If you are calling with an email issue, press 1. If you are having internet connectivity issues with your Windows PC, press 2. Macintosh callers, press 3.
And that's going to bring us to our cool internet site of the week, and hopefully this will help you with that very problem. This week's site is called GetHuman.com. From their site, I read, "Our goal is to improve the quality of customer service and phone support in the U.S. This free website is run by volunteers and is powered by over 1 million consumers who demand high-quality phone support from the companies that they use. There is a great database of numbers and codes you can use when calling customer service. Many times, just pressing 0 will get you to an operator. But some companies actually have secret codes. On the site, there's also a feature where you can rate a particular company's customer service. If you find the need to call for help, try going here first and see if the company you are contacting is listed. It could be a real time saver." That's going to bring us to the end of another show. I'm still looking for sponsors. Contact me through jopy.com. And don't forget, you can find all the links to all the things we talked about today right at jopy.com. Be sure to get out and support local music. Thanks for listening. Rockstar Diet Soft Drinks. Rockstar. Energy to burn. Live like a rockstar. I do.